Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have my good friend Eva Hare on her second book, Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Physics. Eva is a radio show host of Infinite Consciousness here on BBS, and she has interviewed a number of very prominent scientists and researchers in different areas, especially consciousness research, physics, chemistry, and has asked them all about questions as what is consciousness, what is just a whole group of detailed questions to get an idea of what we know about the science of consciousness. I have interviewed many of the same, not all of them, but many of the same scientists here on my show, Temple of Health, and so I'm very interested in her book because I'm very interested in the topic. Welcome, Eva. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Susan. I really do appreciate your having me on, especially right now. My book's due out in mid-September. It's been a long way.
And where do people go to get your book?
They can get it on barnesandnoble.com. They'll be able to get it on Amazon. Right now, anything they get will have to be like a pre-order thing because it's not even printed. It's probably going to print first of next week.
Where did you get the idea for this concept? Where did that come from, and when did you start working on it?
Well, it started about, you know me, so you know about me, but about in 1995, I had like a spontaneous epiphany kind of thing. And it's what got me on the track of when I woke up after that thing. I was just profoundly obsessed with consciousness. I didn't know the word for it at that time, but after that I learned it. And I studied and read everything I could get my hands on. And then I met this really amazing man named Dr. Roy Scruggs, who was an astrophysics engineer for NASA on the Apollo project back in the 70s. And he also was very enlightened, I guess is the word. I don't know. But so he was a hardcore scientist, but he was also very spiritual, not religious, but spiritual. And we would spend literally hundreds of hours, many of the hours you were sitting there with us, talking about this thing, consciousness. And so then, I was standing in the grocery store one day, and when you first happens to you, an enlightenment thing, you get very excited about it, and you tell everybody about it and talk about it all the time. And I was talking about it to somebody in the grocery store line, and he turned out to be a physician, and I was talking about this thing, consciousness, and he looked at me like I was an idiot. And I said, well, why are you looking at me that way? He said, well, it doesn't make any sense, consciousness, what you're saying. And I said, well, what is your definition of it? And he said, well, awareness, opposite of being in a coma. And at that moment, I went, oh, my God, no wonder we can't have a quantum leap in science putting together a model of physical reality, because people are using this word consciousness all over the place, and one person may mean the zero-point field, one person may mean the irreducible unit, one person may mean opposite of being in a coma, one person may mean levels of awareness. And so Roy and I started developing a list of what we call 20 questions. And we, what is mind? What is consciousness? What is awareness? And I asked all of these scientists the same questions, and I was flabbergasted because they're all scientists in the same field. They're all doing the same kind of work. But I was flabbergasted at the different definitions that these people gave to these different things like mind and consciousness. In fact, Amit Goswami, when he read it, he went, oh, my God, I had no idea that this was going on in the world. No wonder we can't have a meeting in the minds in science. Imagine 30 scientists sitting at a table trying to come up with a model of physical reality, and they're all using this word, but they all mean a different thing, and they don't know that they mean a different thing, so they end up fighting and jumping up from the table and running away and slamming the door and being angry at one another. So I thought I would put this book together with the help of Roy, and and hopefully bridge that gap so that. And I also found that some of these scientists that is doing major work in consciousness and quantum mechanics have no idea the existence of one another, much less what the other one's doing. They don't even know the other one exists. And so I thought if I can help them, you know, hold hands, at least be aware that what they're doing, we could possibly have a quantum leap, which would bring the world closer to peace and unity and make great changes. So that's kind of how it started.
And it seems that the third dimensional concepts, the ones just in the physical reality, a lot of scientists believe that consciousness is a product of the brain. That is kind of materialism. And that's something that's taught in school. That's something that, you know, even in medical school, anesthesiologists, this is kind of the idea that the brain produces the conscious state. Whereas you and I know that the majority of consciousness researchers feel that consciousness is, as Amit Goswami says, the ground of all being, or before anything, the big void out of it, what everything comes out of. Consciousness is primary, and then the brain is actually way down in the third dimension, acting maybe as a receiver, a transmitter, or like a pager or something along those lines. So those are two very different concepts, and you can see how scientists, hardcore scientists that only consider physical reality, aren't going to understand what scientists like Amit Goswami mean when he talks about the various levels of consciousness.
That's exactly right. And that is exactly why when these people start talking, there is, brain does have something to it called awareness. Mm-hmm. It contributes to awareness, but it has nothing to do with consciousness as we use it, meaning the irreducible unit. You know, I guess the bottom line is that all of these scientists agree on, every single one of them is one of the few things that they totally agreed on, is there is no such thing as matter on the quantum level. Mm-hmm. And if there's no such thing as matter on the quantum level, then what separates us from anything else? We are the whole and just a part, if that makes any sense. So when these people are talking, they need to define that thing they're talking about. If a medical doctor is talking to a physicist about putting, or even another physicist that doesn't understand quantum mechanics, if it's somebody doing just hardcore rocket science maybe, they need to define what they're talking about. Otherwise, they're on completely different pages and have no idea they're on different pages. And so they're going to get into a fight, if that makes any sense.
One of the, I don't remember which one, it might have been Amit Goswami, who's a quantum physicist, was saying that, or it might have been De Quincey, but it was one of them was saying that one of the primary things we do not understand is how consciousness takes the probability waves and drops them into actuality in the third dimension. And I found that to be a really, really interesting question when I was reading the book. But if people listening to us can understand that there is a model whereby consciousness or the observer, which does not need a physical body to exist. I mean, people are conscious in near-death experiences. They're conscious in the dream state. They're conscious between lives. You know, you can hypnotize people and go between lives. And then you can hypnotize people to go into past lives. So your consciousness is not bound by either time or space. So you are not your physical body, but consciousness, and we don't mean necessarily.
Yeah, differentiate that with consciousness. You're being in one of those sentences is awareness. You are aware,
right?
But in the other sentence, consciousness is God, basically, or irreducible.
Right.
Or
well,
force,
maybe perhaps as you go up dimensionally. The final, the most broad dimension where the atoms are, maybe even not present, we don't even know. But the highest level of consciousness would be encompassing of all consciousness, in the lower levels.
when Christian DeQuincy said that, or I think it was him that said that, it kind of reminded me, you know, when you see those placards at a ball game, at a major ball game, and hundreds of people have placards, and they all flip them over, and they make a certain picture or a certain word. That's kind of how it is when conscious, when the wave vector collapses. It collapses, you know, each one of those little atoms until it forms a picture. And we think that picture is real, but it's really not. It's just it's a holographic environment, and we perceive it as being real, but it's really just atoms vibrating at a very low rate, and it's observed by some observer, whoever that might be, whether it's electronic or whether it's a human being or an animal. When it's observed, it makes a picture, and we think that that thing is real, but it's really not real. It's just the picture.
One of the best explanations of that was by the one of the founders of the superstring theory. I think is you probably know how to pronounce his name, Makuu Kichu. Is that right? Have you interviewed him?
Or Michio Kaku or something. No, I have
not.
Yeah,
that one. I interviewed him on the holographic universe, and the holographic universe is probably the best book on what you just described. It is actually, what he says, reality is actually a holographic videotape, okay? It's a, you know, it's not just a hologram, it's actually a videotape because it goes throughout time. You know, it keeps running. And it's a fascinating concept, but he goes way into that concept.
I kind of describe that as like watching a Nickelodeon, and if you keep watching, you watch one movie, but if you stop on one frame in your life, then you're going to, or let's just say you're going through your life, and then you suddenly stop and start focusing on it. So you go down the rabbit hole into everything that possibly can be regarding that, everything you can possibly feel and learn about that particular experience. So if you don't want to experience that thing, then don't stop on that photograph. Keep going.
Right. So whatever you really put your intent and focus on is more likely to drop from probability into actuality.
Yes. I mean, I think
your fears can manifest. I mean, we've all known people who are deathly afraid of getting cancer, and then they get cancer. And so you wonder, I don't know the answer. Is the answer that they had a premonition of them getting cancer and therefore they were afraid of it? Because, you know, our consciousness is not bounded by time. So things that are in the future, probabilities in the future can affect the current time as can, you know, the past. You know, you can send your consciousness into the future, you can send your consciousness into the past. Like you said, you go into the past to concentrate on one frame.
I think a lot of things about that statement, and I ask some of these people about it. It's hard to know. As souls, we come here obviously to learn lessons. Otherwise, we would never be anything different than we were when we were born. We wouldn't know anything else. Do we come in with our plan being that we get cancer so that we learn humility, having to have somebody change our bed sheets for us or change our diapers for us when we're 50 years old? Or is it something that we manifest simply because we're so scared of it, we focus on it all the time, so we make that thing happen? I think there are two answers there to that.
That's the question. I mean, that we don't know. But certainly, you cannot determine that linear time is the only thing that is. And I was watching Nova recently. Brian Greene, who, as you know, wrote The Universe and some other books on this, a physicist, has a program on Nova. It has something like the quantum cosmos in the title of the series. But the show I was watching was called The Illusion of Time. And it actually is probably still able to be TiVo'd. But that particular show blew me away because they actually have graphics of this idea called eternity. And then he shows how time differs where, you know, how fast you're moving, all the concepts of Einstein. and how time slices differently, and how if you're in a certain far away and looking, you can actually look into the future because there's a curve, time will curve into the future. I need to watch it again. The concepts are just tremendous. But if people will realize that time is illusionary, it is not, it is a construct, it is definitely not linear. And there is something that is called eternity that encompasses all of time, that I think they'll be able to understand better what the quantum physicists were dealing with when they talk about space-time and they talk about the various attributes of time.
That's
and then you know
the
then
questions.
We have the question, how does time space-time how does consciousness relate to space-time?
That's actually one of the questions I would ask some of those people. Does time really
exist? That's right.
Exist?
It is.
And most and all of them would say there is no such thing as time. You know,
right.
If you didn't have a clock, what time is it? It's right now time. That's all there is. It's right now, right now, right now. So
that's
I think,
true.
You know, it really doesn't even exist. It is just an illusion to us, and we think that it does because we get focused on it. And
right.
The sooner that you can, when those bad things happen in your life that you don't want to happen, people always say, well, if you can really manifest your intentions, why do I have this in my life? Because of mind chatter. You know, consciousness, when I say consciousness, and I'm talking about the ground of a being, not just awareness, consciousness doesn't know the difference between I want and I don't want. It just knows that you're thinking about, if you don't like black horses, and you're thinking all the time, I don't want a black horse, I don't want a black horse, it doesn't know the don't want. It just knows the black horse. So you end up with a black horse that you don't want, and it may come in the form of a black Ford Mustang, you know, that runs into your car because it doesn't differentiate. It just knows black horse. Another question that I asked that was amazing with to me was, do we have free will? And one of the, they would first say, of course we have free will. And I said, okay, if we have free will, why does anything bad happen? So do you really mean that we have free will to place intention, but we don't have free will to make sure that it happens? Because there's something bigger, there's a bigger thing or a bigger energy out there that is above us that we don't have control of. And so when I ask it that way, every single scientist agree that we do not have complete free will.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think free will, like time, is illusionary. You know, you give a good example of the child in the back seat. Why don't you give that example?
When I, a long time ago, I had a teacher, and we actually got into an argument about this because I said, I can manifest anything I want. And he said, no, you can't. And I said, yes, I can. So he said, well, let me tell you a story. Imagine that you're a two-year-old sitting in the back seat of a car and is strapped into a car seat with a little yellow steering wheel. Everybody's seen those kind of car seats. And you think you're driving that car until you come up to the four-way stop and God's driving, or mother, dad, whoever the higher power is, whatever you want to call that thing, is driving the car. And at the four-way stop on the right, there's a playground. On the left, there's a grocery store. And you go, oh, I'm going to the playground today. But the car, so you turn right with your little yellow steering wheel. But the car goes left because God says, I'm going to the grocery store. So at that moment, you realize you do not have complete free will to drive that car to the playground. What you do have is complete free will as to how you're going to respond to that situation. That's what free will really is. How are you going to react to something that's in your face? There's your free will. Not in manifest.
And,
you know, and we can, we, they all acknowledge that we can manipulate physical reality with intention, but we can't guarantee it. Can't guarantee that.
I'll tell you what you can do, though. What you can do is in, you know, through spiritual practices, through intent, through, you know, whatever you want to call it, you can get in touch with that higher power and have that higher power available to you in a much more congruent conversation in the way of spiritual sight and hearing, so that you are fine with whatever happens because you have a premonition of what's happening and then what's going to happen. And one of the masters told this story. there, he says, this is mastery. A master is walking down the street, and a group of kids come and steal his walking stick, which is very valuable. And he doesn't worry. He just keeps on walking because he knows around the block somebody else is going to recognize that as his walking stick, take it away from the children, and give it back to him. And he has that knowledge that that's going to happen. So he has no concern whatsoever. So here is a master who functions outside of space and time because he's connected to his soul. So he just is able to go through and handle whatever happens, kind of with grace and, you know, not getting emotional, not wasting energy at all.
Yeah,
and I think that is possible for all of us to do. I really do.
I call it submission. Okay, that happened. It'll all work out in the end if you don't react to it in a negative way.
Right. I mean, if he starts chasing the kids and, you know, trying to, you know, cause a bunch of problems and then gets arrested for, you know, knocking a kid over, you see the different choices. Yeah, you have free will, but the best thing is to be in communication with the higher guidance. In the, you know, and some people think it's your soul, some think it's your guardian angels or your guides, whoever it is, it doesn't really matter. But I think it's that higher portion of yourself that is always there, was there before you were born and will be there after you die, who actually knows the best thing. I mean, actually knows what's around the corner. And so they can tell you to go right or left. And if you listen to that, and if you follow that, you have something we call spiritual protection. And if you don't, then you can have, you know, a lot more stuff happen to you until you learn to listen to it. And people call it intuition, the small, still voice within, the little, you know, the little chills that they get when they have certain thoughts, whatever. There's many little signs. But I think that is what's happening now. I think this energy that we're currently in is getting people to really understand that they have that guidance available.
It reminds me of something else that a lot of them would say, and that's synchronicities. They don't know the
mm-hmm.
science behind it, and they don't know why, but they do know that they occur. And they do
right.
know that if you watch for those synchronicities and move your feet, so to speak, like in a tennis match, and do whatever's
mm-hmm.
presented when do something when a synchronicity appears, that it will take
mm-hmm.
you to that right place. And none of them knew why,
right.
but all of them pretty much agreed that that was a fact.
Mm-hmm. And I think that when synchronicities start to happen, you're on the right path. I think that is a sign that you're progressing into being in more communication with the universe.
They always happen to everybody, but everybody doesn't pay attention. So when you get to the point where you do notice them, you know that you're moving on down the
right.
line of higher, in this particular case, awareness or more cohesion with consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that watching for those things, because they're always there, it's just learning to pay attention to them, means something to you. It's like going down the
I think that it also shows that there is a spiritual world where spiritual messages can cause certain things to happen that we call synchronicities, too. I'm actually looking at synchronicities pretty closely, and I'm seeing a whole bunch of stuff. I'd like to. Somebody needs to write a book on synchronicities. Maybe that can be your next book, because
yeah.
there's a whole bunch of stuff behind synchronicities that we've yet to learn. But it's certainly
I use them
there.
All the time, and it's usually within 3 days. The other
mm-hmm.
day, I had something in my life, and I was like praying or intending or whatever you want to call it, and I said, "I need a sign, God. I need a sign that you hear me." And I'd really like that sign to be a red bird. So
mm-hmm.
for the next few days, I paid attention. And the next day, I was sitting outside of my backyard, and lo and behold, a red bird came up and sat down, literally, on the swing that I was sitting on. What's the likelihood
wild,
of that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it gave me comfort that there was something else there with me, supporting me, empowering
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
Because it just wasn't very much likelihood that a red bird would come and sit on the swing that I was sitting on. I mean, they don't like
no,
that.
No, that's not.
The beginning,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, that's not normal behavior for a bird. That's true.
Yeah, it's not.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your authors that you interviewed. And I guess I'd like you to tell me why you chose them and what particular things they had to say that you thought were really interesting. Chapter one is Robert Jan and Brenda Dunn.
Well, it's actually Robert John. And Robert was the dean of the engineering department at Princeton. And the reason mm-hmm. that I picked Robert and Brenda and Dean Radin and Christian DeQuincy and Irvin Laszlo and Bill Tiller and Amit Goswami and Tom Campbell, I can't remember the rest, but the reason I did about 50 or 60 interviews preparing this book, trying to find mm-hmm. the best people that I could find. So I wanted to pick people who had hardcore credentials in science.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're conditioned by science from the time that we get in kindergarten. You know, 2 + 2 = 4. So I wanted people that had long-standing tenured credentials at wherever they were, because if they wouldn't be where they were if they didn't work hard and if they weren't good at what they were doing. So that's why I picked the people that I picked, because mm-hmm. I want people to understand. The main goals of this book is to teach you that we are not real. We live in a holographic environment, that there is no matter on the quantum level. And I can't stress the importance of grasping that one concept, because if there is no matter on the quantum level, that means that if you could have a microscope that could zoom all the way down to the smallest particle in an atom, when you get down to that smallest particle, it's really not a particle at all. It's just energy. At some point, there are no particles. There's nothing but energy. And if that's true, and these scientists seem to think that it is, then there is nothing separating us from anything else. There is nothing separating us from any other person, and there's nothing separating us from God. So that means that we are God. In a form, with the knowing taken away. So we are all-powerful spiritual beings. We can change this world with our thoughts, with only thought. You know, Bill Tiller did the experiments with the water, where he had mm-hmm. water donated by water companies so that people would know that it wasn't tampered with, sent it to different labs all over the world, and then placed an intention. He and his wife, and Norm Shealy and his wife, got into a meditative state and focus and intention in this little electric box. And they shipped that box to each one of the labs where they sent the water. And the intention was for all the water in those bottles in group A or one control set of bottles, that the pH would increase in those bottles of water by 1 point. Well, that's a big deal. You're a doctor. You know what happens if your pH is a point off of where it should be. You get sick.
And then they did
another one where they lowered the pH by 1 point, and it all happens within 3 days. So if you mm-hmm. can do that with only mind on the other side of the world, what does that tell you? That we are the ones that can change this world. We are the ones that can bring peace to this world. We are the ones that can clean the water up. We are the ones that can clean our food up. We can do anything that we want with our mind if we get in a cohesive state, and that's where the problem comes in. Many scientists say, well, it's not reproducible science. Well, it's not reproducible unless you're in the same state, which is a measurable state, like low theta or high delta. They can measure that. So when you get in that state, you can literally change your world. And that's an important thing to understand, whether it be your health or the war in Iraq or Afghanistan, you can change that because you are God. There's nothing separating you from that. And that's
a proven
fact.
Yeah, and so many people grow up with the belief that they're a victim of everything. You know, I'm a victim of my genetics. I'm a victim of my family. You know, I'm this way because of this, or, you know, they made me do that, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really a matter of I mean, just as you have to drop the idea that the brain produces consciousness, that's a very limited. The brain
you
produces
mean awareness.
Awareness
when you say that,
but it does not produce consciousness per se. Okay, the brain itself, the physical brain, is not producing consciousness. There's no evidence of that.
No.
You also have to understand that you are not a victim of things outside of you.
You are the creator. I mean, it's a fact. There's no mass on the quantum level, no matter. So what separates you from anything else, that means you are the creator of your reality. There's nothing else there to do it but you.
Right.
I don't know any better way to say it.
Yeah. Michael Rice is a great teacher that I used to have on the radio show about once a month, who wrote a book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And really explains this concept really well. But, you know, getting out of victim consciousness and getting out of the idea that things happen to you rather than, you know, with you, you know, co-creating with you. And then once you realize that you have a say in external reality through your thoughts and especially through your coherent thoughts, like you said, it's not just, you have to develop spiritual practices to the degree so that you're not in monkey mind all the time. You've heard people talk about monkey mind, which is just random thoughts here and there, and
that's
not
a very key
at all
thing. You
coherent.
Have to control mind chatter. You have to stop
right.
it. To do anything, you have to stop the mind chatter. Otherwise, you manifest that thing that you focus on the most. So analyze your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, become the observer.
If you analyze your thoughts and realize what you're thinking and then look around you, you'll see that what's around you are the things that you think about all the time.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's happening even more and more now.
Yeah,
like
so
I said, there's an energy coming in now that's causing things to manifest a lot quicker. It was like every little contest I was entering, I was winning. It was hilarious, you know.
I mean,
having a great time here. but honestly, no, I am. I mean, it's true. I mean, why would my luck suddenly just change, you know? I think it's because we're manifesting, like, a lot more.
I don't know what it is.
I happen to be manifesting winning contests, but other people are manifesting other things, you know.
Yep.
Depends on what you focus on.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, what else can you tell us about what you learned from the different scientists?
Well, I mean, there's really three or four main things. The one was we have a terrible linguistics problem with the word consciousness and mind and awareness. We have a problem with people being able to reproduce experiments using intention because those people don't understand that you have to change that your state of mind for it to happen. And the other thing was the thing about the no matter on the quantum level. I mean, none of this is being taught in any schools right now. But this is the science that will be taught in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get a jump on changing your life, if you really want to change your life, spend time meditating because you will only grow to the same degree that you have silence in your life. And all of them agreed to that because there is no time. And consciousness can't distinguish what the things that you visualize. It's kind of like an etch-a-sketch. You know, when you first get an etch-a-sketch, that little gray screen, it's all clean and it doesn't have any lines on it. But the more you draw on it, the more it kind of gets engraved on there and you can't shake it clean anymore. That's exactly how mind is. So the more you visualize it and the more you feel it and the more you think about it, the more engraved that it becomes on your mind. So the way you stop that, and everybody agreed this, is by stopping thought. If you can stop thoughts, and when you use visualization techniques, if you feel it, you get a picture in your mind and feel it, at the exact same time, you're much more likely to get an occurrence that you desire to happen from that. I don't know if that makes any sense or not. But
yeah, I explain it to people that if you are always on transmit, you can't be on receive. I mean, you can't transmit and receive at the same time. So people who are always thinking, always having thoughts generated, don't receive messages from higher levels, like maybe levels outside of space and time that can be very important to you. So you do have to have a blank mind. And I didn't realize that I had achieved that until one of my friends kept bugging me, and it was kind of annoying, but he would always say, What are you thinking? Do it all the time. And I realized that when he did that, what I was observing was that I wasn't thinking anything. I hadn't had a thought in 5 minutes, you know. So that's how I explain it to people, is that if you can quiet your mind so that if a friend came up and asked you, what were you thinking, you really weren't thinking anything. You were just receiving thoughts. That then your awareness has really expanded. And, you know, you won't get caught off guard by things because you'll be warned about them. You'll know when to call somebody, because when you're guided to call somebody, they're going to be there to answer the phone, and you won't play telephone tag and waste time. These are all things that occur when you start doing the work of increasing your consciousness. I mean, everybody has the same experience. So that's kind of what you can expect if you're able to, through meditative or other spiritual practices, learn to quiet your mind.
I think another thing that I learned that was of interest is, does the brain think or does it just know? And pretty much everybody agreed that the brain does not think. It's just like a computer, and you put a program in it and it runs. That what the brain does is process consciousness here with the big C. The quantum entanglement of everything that's out there processes through your brain, and your brain interprets it in a way so that you can understand what it's meaning to you. So I think that was a very big thing, because many people think that the brain thinks, but that's not what happens.
And I think the neuroscience experiments, where people have very little brain left, you know, physically, and yet can think and remember and, you know, do all these things just fine, that would almost be physical proof of that concept.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
and I think, I mean, that those are the most important things that I can get across. We do not have complete free will. Brain doesn't think. We live in a holographic environment, and we're not real. There's no matter on the quantum level, so you are God. I mean, that's the most important things that I can think of that come from these 10 scientists. I mean, if they've proven it with their experiments, then you if you believe 2 + 2 = 4, then you have to believe that this is true. Does that make any sense?
I think, you know, the average person thinks that quantum physics is so far beyond what they can understand that they don't really pay attention to it. And I think that's why that movie, What the Bleep Do We Know, did a lot for putting quantum physics into a visual field, so that, you know, most people could understand it. And many of the people that, I think quite a few of the people you interviewed were actually in that movie. And
one thing they did have to say about that movie was that the science wasn't right. Because that movie makes people think that they can go out there and think a thought and their Cadillac's going to pop up in their front yard. And what they need to get is that the average person walking around thinking with all the mind chatter is not going to get that Cadillac. There's another story that I tell that I have no idea if this is a true story, but it's a story that somebody told me, and it's kind of a funny one. But there was this guy who really was obsessed with Silver Clouds Rolls Royce. All he ever did was cut pictures out and look at books about them and read about them, and he'd look at the newspaper every weekend to see which one, if anyone was for sale. And one weekend, he was looking at the newspaper, and he saw a blue Silver Clouds Rolls Royce for sale for $50. So he calls up the woman, and he said, are you serious? You've got this Silver Cloud Rolls Royce for sale for $50? And she said, yeah. And he said, well, what's wrong with it? You know, is it wrecked? Does it have a motor in it? She goes, no, it's perfect. And he said, fine, I'll come and take it. So he went and bought this Silver Cloud Rolls Royce. And so he said to the woman, why are you selling this Silver Cloud Rolls Royce for $50? And she said, well, I was married to this man, and he left me for his secretary, and they moved. He left me the house, and he left me taken care of. But he left, took her, and they moved to Florida and lived down on the beach. And the only thing he asked me to do was sell his Silver Cloud Rolls Royce and send him a check. So the man manifested himself a Silver Cloud Rolls Royce. The only problem was he forgot to manifest the money to take care of it, so it had to sit in the garage. He couldn't afford the tag, and he couldn't afford the insurance, and he couldn't afford to maintain it. So when you're trying to intend, you kind of have to put the longitude and latitude in there, or something will get left out.
Yeah, I think it's not really possible from the egoic mind or the third dimensional mind at that level to know what's best to manifest. And I think we've all, you know, as we go through, you know, the spiritual development that we're going through, we realize that we really have to be in contact with the higher mind to even know what the playing field is like.
That's
the
one
higher
thing
mind
that
being...
Dean... Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry?
I'd say that's one thing that Dean Radin talked about. When you're trying to intend, he told me this little story. He said, imagine that you've got 1,000 people standing around a pond, and you want to get all the water out of the pond. So everybody picks up a rock, and they throw it in, and all they get is a bunch of splashes. But if everybody picks up a pebble... The exact same size and the exact same shape, and they throw it in at the exact same time with the exact same momentum, all the water's going to come out of the pond. With the moral of that story being, when you say a prayer or when you're doing intending, you know, I've heard people in churches pray for an hour, and it's like all over the place. So what you really should do is have a focused, short, direct intention of that will be done. Whatever that highest thing is for you, be done. Otherwise, it's just everything cancels out one another if you're saying prayers and intending all over the place. So, or you might manifest something that you don't want or can't use, like that car. I mean, you couldn't do anything with it. So you use focused intention in a short, focused, like, I'm whole, or I'm healthy, or I'm wealthy, or whatever it is that you want, that focus, short intention. Another thing that I thought was very interesting is all of the scientists agreed that consciousness is in gradients. And when I use consciousness this time, I mean awareness, that everybody walking around has a different gradient of awareness. That's why when some people talk to some people who have shifted a little bit, they're to the point in their lives where they know that there's something, they've been in some fundamental religion all of their lives, but now suddenly they're realizing, you know what, there's something more to this. I don't know what it is, and I don't know where to look, and I don't know what it is, but I know there's something more, and then one day they find it and figure it out, and they try to talk to somebody else who was in their Sunday school class, for example. And all they do is argue. And so for that person that's gotten it, it's like talking to a telephone pole. But for the person that they're trying to explain it to, that person thinks that this aware person is a know-it-all. So everybody
or crazy.
Has a different... Yeah.
I've been called crazy.
Yeah, me too.
This is great.
You know, everybody has a different level of awareness. And so you need to understand that everybody has a different level of awareness. And once you pay attention to that, as soon as you start talking to somebody, as soon as they open their mouth, you know where they are. And you know whether or not you should waste your time getting into that argument with them, because it's really just a waste of time and causing ill feelings. Because and it has nothing to do with education and nothing to do with intellect. It has to do with how open you are to all there is, how well you know who you are on the inside as a spiritual being. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that phrase that, you know, to those who believe, no proof is necessary. To those who don't believe, no proof is possible.
Exactly.
That's a, yeah.
Exactly.
So you have to know who not even to bother with, because it's a waste of time.
And the thing that brought that question up.
Which doesn't exist, by the way.
Yeah. The thing that brought that question up with me was David Hawkins' book, Power versus Force, which really helps you understand the different gradients of awareness, whether the person is fear-based or whether they're open or susceptible to being open, because it comes in gradients. And when it first happens, when you first shift, you kind of think, I see this all the time too, and now I've gotten to the point where I just smile. When somebody first shifts, they think they know everything. Mm-hmm. They think they know everything. And they'll tell you, I can save the world, and I can do this and that. Mm-hmm. I smile at them now, because now I know the more aware you become, the more aware you are that you know nothing.
Right. Yeah.
The more aware that you know nothing.
True.
There's just so much more out there that you don't know yet. But at least you know that you don't know it.
Right.
So that's an important thing that I learned.
Yeah.
And science, I mean, these scientists have learned that too. So for them to recognize that and accept it is an important thing. If 2 + 2 is four, then you got to believe these other things.
Yeah, that's true. So, would you like to give your contact information and tell them about the first book that you wrote too?
Well, you can find me at www.evaherr, and that's EvaHerr.com, and it has everything on there, everything about me on there. My first book was called Agape, The Intent of the Soul, and it really is a handbook for life, to tell you the truth. But it was a book about a dark night of the soul that I had, because I grew up, I'm not the same woman that I was. I was very egotistical, I was vain, I was very self-centered, and I really had no use for you unless you had something that I wanted or could do something for me. But when I had the enlightenment experience, it changed me in an instant. So now it's not what can you do for me, it's what can I do for you. And I think that the more evolved you become, the more that you will find that that's what feeds your soul the most, and where you'll find the most happiness in your life is when you're serving others. But the book is about that. It's about a little bit about I got a medical intuitive ability when it happened, and it's a little bit about why you are your emotions, particular emotions, and how they manifest in particular illness. It's about how to learn how to detect illness long before it comes, because it presents probably 10 years it starts presenting before it ever gets here. So if you can catch it then, you can either stop it from coming or heal it, unless it's just your path, your lesson in life to have that experience. So it's about that.
True.
And I made up a list of questions, every question that I'd ever wanted to know from God, because at that point I was in fundamental religion, so I looked at everything as God being separate and different from me, and it was all the answers that I got in my meditations about how we became to be, and you know what's wrong with the world, and how we can fix the world, and actually some confirmations. Like, I'll never forget this one time, I got some piece of information. I don't remember what it was, but the thing, I always get these funny confirmations, and I heard in my head, you'll know we're telling the truth, Eva, because the last Marine taken will not be beheaded. And I have all these notes somewhere. But if you'll remember, gosh, probably 10 or so years ago, when fighting was going on overseas, there was a bunch of soldiers that were being taken, and they were having their heads cut off. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And they were shipping their heads back to, you know. And so there's this one soldier that had been taken, and every other soldier before him, the head had been cut off. Well, sure enough, the next day it was on the news that this soldier had not been beheaded, but he had just gone AWOL to see his family. And so, you know, how would I know that? How would I know that that one soldier out of 50, or how many ever it happened to, would not get his head cut off?
Right.
So it's just, if you ask for it, if you want to know something, and you want to know whether you're hearing your little mind that's running all the time, because little mind runs all the time horizontally across your forehead. You can watch it like a ticker tape, you know, a stock market ticker tape. But consciousness drops in all at one time, right in the center of your head on the top, like an idea. Mm-hmm. You get it all at one time, the whole picture.
Right.
You just have to, you know, stop and watch the picture so that you'll know what it's saying. So that's how you distinguish whether it's little mind and mind chatter or if it's something that's really coming in from the universe through quantum entanglement. So it's a book about that. What can you do to better your life? How do you grow yourself as a spiritual being? And what can you do to contribute to humanity and make it a better place? And it's like, I call it kindergarten language because I didn't know what I know now, and I just wrote it as simply as I could understand it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
but
what
it's good. It's a really, really good book for people who are just beginning to understand that there is a higher consciousness.
And it's one of those books where I still go back and read that book sometime. Every single time I read that book, and it's my own book, I get something different out of it. It's one of those. Read it over and over.
I agree. It's a really good book.
But it's very, very simple, but it's very, very deep. So you have to read it a bunch of times to get all the stuff out of it.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And I'm in like the movie Metaphysia for like 3 seconds. 3 seconds.
3 seconds.
There's some videos on my website. When not too long ago, as a matter of fact, I got into a really dark place in my life, and I'm like, what am I going to do? People think that when someone has an enlightenment experience that they're happy for the rest of their life, that nothing ever goes wrong. That's not the truth. You know, the only difference is you still get the stuff, and sometimes it's even worse. It's just that you learn how to deal with it differently. So I went back and watched my own video.
I think that's true, but, you know, a lot of things don't bother you like they used to at all. I mean, it's
exactly,
almost like...
You know that it's not real, and you know if you just don't go down that rabbit hole, it'll pass by.
And the other thing, too, is that you can, you know, nothing really bothers you because, number one, you have information outside of space and time about the outcome. And, you know, one of the masters said you could be infinitely patient if you knew the outcome.
That's exactly right.
If you know what's going to happen, you can wait a long time. I mean, you can be terribly patient. If you don't know the outcome, you tend to be impatient.
That's exactly right. And consciousness, a big C, will always, always work out for your best interest. You may be in something that seems absolutely horrible. But if you just be patient and wait long enough, you will find that horrible thing has been the most wonderful blessing in disguise that you could ever have. If you can just
hang
on.
And so at the end of your life, you can look back and say, I wouldn't change a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in writing that Agape book, many of the people that were in that book, you know, Robin and Roy and a bunch of other people, many of those people lost their loved ones, they lost all of their wealth, they lost their homes. I mean, they lost a tremendous amount of things, and every single one of them, including myself, will tell you, I wouldn't take $1 million for the experience. Wouldn't take $1 million.
Well, and then most everybody recreated everything back again. I mean, you know, it's not... I mean, Carolyn Mace said that when you change from the horizontal life to the vertical life being that you have higher influences that you that you take into consideration and actually and eventually use all the time, you either have to think you're going to lose everything or actually lose everything. For me, it was I thought I was going to lose everything. I actually didn't, but I was convinced that I was going to die from a number of different things that happened. But I didn't die, and when I didn't die, I had released everything. I was perfectly okay with dying. And so it is true that a lot of people actually do lose things, but like again, they recreate them. You can have millions of dollars, lose it all, and then you can recreate it all again.
If so, nothing bad ever
happens, what does it matter? You know, what does it matter if you lose everything if you can recreate it?
And that's another thing. I try to tell my kids and my friends, please learn through my experiences so that you don't have to. You don't have to learn them yourself. All you got to do is learn them.
Mm-hmm.
Learn through the people around you. You don't have to do it. Doesn't have to hurt if you will just learn through other people. Life lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? You don't have
yeah,
to
Yeah, and I think people
learn
learning life the same life lessons tend to cluster together to help each
yes.
other learn, too.
That's true. I think so, too.
In families or in churches or in whatever, in whatever, it doesn't really matter. But and then also try not to be judgmental of other people's life lessons. You know, you don't really know what their soul contracts were. And so the guy that's homeless and seems to be mentally ill and seems to have all these health problems that, you know, and is, you know, doesn't have clean clothes, and you don't know what his life story is. You don't know what his life lessons
are. I saw something on my Facebook page the other day that reminded me of just that. Because
mm-hmm.
most of the people that follow me on Facebook are spiritual seekers, and they try to do the right
mm-hmm.
thing, at least their heart's in the right place. But somebody posted something, and it was something about, to all you girls out there who dress inappropriately or do pornographic photographs or whatever, you're really just, and they use some expletive that I don't want to repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I ended up deleting the picture, but I thought about writing that person saying, you don't understand, because she specifically said this to teenage girls. Most teenage
mm-hmm.
girls who do those things have been raped or molested or trafficked, and so they don't know any better. Those people have no, they're judging those young girls,
mm-hmm.
you know, as being terrible people when those young girls do what they do because that's what they've been taught is what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you should think twice before you judge somebody because you have no idea really what you're judging.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Christianity is based on that principle. You know, judge not, lest ye be judged, and forgive everybody who you think has offended you. And, I mean, we cluster in Christianity because we have that lesson to learn. So, you know, you can be pretty sure that a lot of people in America are actually, you know, in that particular lesson. And when you actually develop spiritual sight and hearing, you learn so much, so many details, you actually know why somebody's in the situation they're in. I mean, you actually can get the story behind it, and then you have nothing but compassion for that person, even
exactly.
though that person might be a child molester, might be, you know, pretty much of a serial killer. You know, you might not even understand the whole picture of what that person's, you know, the whole thing across many lifetimes, the whole soul picture. And so, I would say, you know, that. The majority of Christian America is learning not to judge, and of course, they're still learning it. You know, it's not a lesson that's been mastered yet. So, but I would just remind everybody out there that when you start to judge somebody, just remember that you don't know the whole story. You can be sure of that. You do not know the soul contracts, what is happening over many lifetimes. You know, we were talking with reincarnation that that if you reincarnate to study religion, you might be a Hindu, a Muslim, a Christian, a Jew, a Buddhist, and then an atheist, because you've got to do every single thing. So if you only saw the atheist lifetime and judged them to be a terrible person, what would you be doing? This person is doing the whole gamut so that they really understand religion. You see?
That's true.
You can't take one lifetime and judge it, because it's part of a much bigger tapestry.
And I think, how much time do we have left?
About 2 minutes.
Oh, I just wanted to say, and I think one other thing that all of the scientists agreed on was that there are multiple realities right where we're standing right now, and that we just can't see them because they vibrate at different rates, parallel universes.
Well, I know that's true.
Yeah. I do too.
So
that was
true.
Just another interesting fact that I knew, but it was nice to have it confirmed by science.
Right.
So you can find me at www.evaher.com. Please take a look at the book on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, or if you want an autographed copy, you can email me directly at evaher@gmail.com, and I'll be glad to send you one when it comes out. If that's different to you.
Well, thank you very much, Eva, for joining us today. Eva, we've been interviewing Eva Herr, the book Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Superscience of Quantum Physics. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Stephanie Marone, What the Animals Taught Me, Stories of Love and Healing from a Farm Sanctuary. And on the 1st of September, 24 Patterns of Wisdom, Navigating the Challenges and Awakenings of the Human Journey by Anthony Lowler. And then on the 8th, James Wasserman, The Temple of Solomon, From Ancient Israel to Secret Societies. Well, Eva, thanks so much. Thanks for joining us. And we will be back with Temple of Health next week.